What if there was one simple pill that could help support your energy, vitality, and cardiovascular function? Well, introducing new and improved Green Tea CR Phytosome formula from Purity Products. It's the power of three of nature's top superfoods, a clinically tested green tea plus curcumin and resveratrol, all in one simple capsule. It's potent, clinically tested, and it works to promote your energy, vitality, cardio health, immunity, and antioxidant defense. Our friends at Purity Products have a free bottle for you today to put to the test. Just pay $4.95 for shipping. Even better, call now and get a second free bottle. Purity's B12 Energy Melts. That's your second free gift. Again, for your free bottles of Green Tea CR and B12 Energy Melts, call 1-800-218-6030. That's 1-800-218-6030. Again, 1-800-218-6030. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking all things cannabis. We're talking not just about CBD. We've covered that subject in the past. We're talking about the whole spectrum of cannabis-related products, also known as medical marijuana. We prefer the term medical cannabis because, well, it doesn't have the connotation of some illicit drug. More and more states are making medical marijuana available. That's controversial because some people think that's nose under the tent for a widespread legalization of pot. There are really two distinct things. One is about medical applications of pot. The other is, you know, is it legitimate as a recreational drug? We're not talking about the latter here. We're talking about specific medical indications with an MD. Patricia Fry, MD, wrote this book, The Medical Marijuana Guide, Cannabis and Your Health. And, you know, before we get into talking about some of the conditions for which it's available, this is your specialty. You're the go-to person. What type of clients do you see? And you also do telemedicine, right? So for people who are desirous of getting the 411 on how best to select products, utilize products, you're a resource, right?
I am. I do. I'm licensed in several states, but even if I'm not licensed in the state, I do telephone and telemedicine educational conferences. So I see patients, sometimes they've already been certified and they don't know what to do or how to use the cannabis to the...
By certified, you mean they're eligible for it because there are certain requirements, especially in certain states. Not everybody, mm-hmm. you know, has a condition for which it's okay to obtain medical marijuana. Is that correct?
Yes, and the conditions vary from state to state. And then there's some states that have a caveat that any condition that the physician feels the patient might benefit from cannabis therapy is a go.
So they leave it to the physician's judgment.
Yes, yes. So in Maryland, the district, and in Virginia, California, some other states, they're more geared towards the specific recommendations or the specific conditions that are listed.
Mm-hmm. Right. So obviously it's complicated because, I mean, people can go the DIY route. They can get your book. They can look at some of the suggestions in the book. But it's complicated. Mm-hmm. There's so many ways you can take this. You can take edibles. You can smoke it. You can vape it. You can take tinctures. There are various mm-hmm. proportions of THC and CBD in these products. And then there's the dosage. How frequently do you use it? How much do you use? So that's, I think, where you come in, is that you sort of help to mm-hmm. counsel patients and advise them. And everybody's individual. You have to admit that there's no one-size-fits-all for this.
Exactly. Everyone is different. Every condition is different. Everyone has a different endocannabinoid system. Some patients respond to very small doses. Some patients need larger doses. And there are a few, probably 2.5 out of 10, that cannabis just doesn't really help. So the trick with cannabis is to know what you're treating, deciding whether this is something that you need more CBD, more THC, or a balance, and then to start with small amounts and to gradually increase it until you're getting the symptom relief you're looking for. And then the frequency of increasing the dose depends on the condition and sometimes on the age of the patient or their past experience with cannabis. So there are a lot of factors, a lot of variables that go into how I recommend ratios of CBD to THC, and whether I recommend a tincture or a topical salve or cream or vaping or smoking. Inhalation has its value. I think it's overly used. I think that inhalation
is quicker.
Not a very efficient
way. It gets in much faster than taking it orally. Yep.
Yeah, but fast in is fast out.
Yep.
So if you have a chronic inflammatory condition, then you're always chasing your symptoms. But it's great for aborting a migraine or mm-hmm. a panic attack mm-hmm. or for severe pain or when someone's back locks up, you know, you go into muscle spasm, you can't move. Inhalation is wonderful. It's like taking cannabis IV. But mm-hmm. for most patients, a slower, longer-lasting delivery is really what they should be shooting for.
And we have to find a sweet spot because, you know, sometimes less is more when it comes to especially pain relief. So let's talk about pain. You know, in the book, you enumerate that there are multiple pathways of pain. And unlike mm-hmm. drugs, you know, some drugs are great for nerve pain, you know, like Neurontin. Okay. Other drugs are great for inflammation, like ibuprofen. It seems that, you know, if you could use the word pain panacea, cannabis comes close to being a pain panacea because it works on multiple pathways.
It does. It's a potent anti-inflammatory. It is, it works at for neuropathic pain. It will shut down the signal and it will protect the nerve. It is, a muscle relaxant. It helps with sleep. It reduces anxiety and it's mood elevating. Most patients with chronic pain have some element of anxiety and depression mm-hmm. and those emotions in and of themselves can actually precipitate the release of pro-inflammatory mediators. So if you don't treat that, you're always playing catch up. The other thing is with cannabis, it potentiates the pain relieving effect of opioids without increasing the risk of respiratory depression. Hmm. So you can work with almost immediately you can cut an opioid dose in half or maybe as much as even 75%. And that also helps because a lot of patients don't realize that just continuing to take these high dose opioids actually increases their pain sensitivity. So by reducing that dose, you're addressing that opioid-induced hyperalgesia, which is a problem. Patients don't sleep well. You can't heal if you're not getting adequate sleep. So cannabis hits so many of these arms that, you know, lead to chronic pain.
What type of pain syndromes are amenable to medical cannabis?
Almost anything. Joint pain from autoimmune disease, from degenerative arthritis, so inflammatory processes, visceral pain, so pain associated with inflammatory bowel or pancreatitis or irritable bowel. Any type of autoimmune process it tends to respond very well to cannabis. I'm even now starting to prepare patients for post-op pain. We're starting to manage even post-op pain. There's a lot in the literature about chronic pain, but we're finding that post-op pain responds as well. And so patients are managing their post-op pain with maybe just a day or two of an opioid as opposed to a week or two. So,
and that minimizes the chances of addiction.
Absolutely. And I really can't think of any migraines. It mm-hmm. works wonders for migraines, for fibromyalgia, for Lyme. I can't think of a pain syndrome that doesn't respond. Cervical, stenosis and radiculopathies or nerve pain. I'm not that impressed with it with treating some of the symptoms like tingling and numbness from mm-hmm. neuropathy,
right.
But it certainly will hit neuropathic pain.
So, good segue to a question that I have. I just saw a 15-year-old with anxiety and debilitating migraines. So what about the use of these kind of compounds in kids? Would it be safe for a 15-year-old or even a younger child? There's been a lot of work with pediatric seizure disorders and the use of these compounds.
I will say that the youngest patient I've treated was six months old at the time, and it was a patient with infantile spasms who has done very well with CBD. I have treated a number of patients for migraines, for Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a chronic pain syndrome. I've treated autistic children for anxiety, I think for me, the bottom line is if the benefit outweighs the risk, then I'm comfortable. Mm-hmm. And you have children with mitochondrial disorders and, other pain syndromes that do very well. So I have, a few young people that are referred to me by, mental health providers with severe anxiety disorder or with depression who have not responded well to pharmaceuticals. Oftentimes, with anxiety, they end up being prescribed antipsychotics like Abilify or Zyprexa.
Very debilitating.
The kids don't like it. Yeah, it's very debilitating. They gain a ton of weight. They don't like it. And they're still anxious. And so I have quite a few that we have started with CBD. CBD is the best medicine for anxiety, and they don't need a lot of THC. Some of the pain patients need a little bit more, but there's another cannabinoid in the plant. It's THCA, and THCA comes from the plant before it's heated. THCA is a good pain reliever, and we've used that to help manage pain and to help manage seizures. So there's a lot we can do with the plant that doesn't even involve THC, and when THC is needed, you're not going to have the same adverse effects from THC when it's combined with CBD.
How about neurodegenerative disorders? You actually have a section of the book about Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease. Can there be benefits? Multiple sclerosis, we already know there's a big advocate of medical marijuana for that in a TV celebrity who is using that.
Yes. Both CBD and THC help all of those conditions. THC is needed for a lot of the neurological conditions. One, it is what really helps to calm the tremor associated with Parkinson's. And sometimes that's what, when inhalation is helpful. I have Parkinson's patients who can use a vape pen, and they can vape a little THC, and their tremor will go away long enough for them to tend to self-care. They can shave, do their hair, they can have their meal, and then, if it's inhalation, it's not going to be more than 2 or 3 hours before that wears off. That's very helpful. THC can interfere with the deposition of the amyloid plaques that are part of the pathophysiology or what causes Alzheimer's, and THC is neuroprotective. So both CBD and THC tend to slow down the progression of the illness in all of those neural degenerative conditions.
And there's no danger that the THC component will make these patients who are already a little bit on the threshold of dementia more confused, more agitated and disoriented. That is not going to happen with properly utilized doses?
Not with the right doses and not with the right combinations. So adding some CBD to that will help that. But we start with very teeny tiny doses of THC and very gradually increase it, because we don't want these patients more confused. We don't want to adversely affect any memory, and we certainly don't want to increase a fall risk, because THC, there are a lot of these cannabinoid receptors in the cerebellum, and so we don't want to do anything that's going to make anyone more wobbly. And that's why it's important to add some CBD for these patients, except, you know, when they go to bed, we can give them THC at night, and then they get a very restful sleep, and we're not worried about those adverse effects.
Yeah, I'm particularly interested in the role of these types of meds for gastrointestinal ailments, because I have quite a few patients who have ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, and they have a lot of pain and discomfort. And I'm really intrigued by the fact that their pain, their spasm is reduced, but also that it may have intrinsic anti-inflammatory properties. It's a little bit like, you know, we give certain herbs that are anti-inflammatory, like boswellan and curcumin, and that the cannabis products may have that type of beneficial effect if taken orally.
They do. And they do tend to do better with oral administration. So a lot of my inflammatory bowel patients almost all use capsules. And it decreases the inflammation. It regulates GI motility. So patients with a lot of output, that slows down. The symptoms of inflammatory bowel disease improve before the actual colonoscopies improve. But you give it a year, and I have patients that have had severe illness. And as a matter of fact, someone who's works in my office now, I sort of had to hire her. She has Crohn's, so it was very severe. She had had a bowel resection. She had an ostomy. She was so debilitated. She was on disability. She couldn't work. She was, you know, barely 90 pounds. 2 years later, with CBD, her colonoscopies are normal, her weight is up, and she said, thanks to you, now I have to go back to work. I said, well, come work for me.
Right. You no longer can get a disability, but it's preferable to be back in the stream of real life. So let's talk about the purity of the stuff and potential contaminants, because back when I was in college, we were worried because we thought that the DEA was spraying paraquat on marijuana fields, and we weren't sure whether we were getting high from the marijuana or from the chemicals that were being sprayed on it. I guess when you're, you know, 20, it doesn't matter. But what's the deal with, you know, the potential for getting unwanted substances with the products that are out there?
The potential is high, unfortunately. Cannabis is it's an environmental cleaner. So if there are pesticides around, not even just if you don't even have to spray the plant. If the field across the way is using pesticides, the plant will pick it up. It'll pick up heavy metals from the soil, from the water, from the air. And that's not a big deal if you're going to use that plant to make paper. But for medicine, the plant really needs to be grown in an environment where it's not going to be exposed to any of those contaminants. And then once the plant is grown and harvested, the process of extracting the cannabinoids from the plant involves oftentimes light hydrocarbons, and then another step needs to be taken to make sure that all of that is out of the product. Unfortunately, most of what's available in the community, people haven't gone to all of those, gone through all those steps to make sure that it's clean. The plant is susceptible to mold, and there were a couple of cases in California of some patients who were immunosuppressed, preparing for transplant. Nebulized some flower or buds that were community acquired, and they were contaminated with a fungus that caused an overwhelming infection in those patients.
Something like aspergillus or something like that.
Exactly.
Nasty.
Yeah, and some of the plants can have aflatoxin, which is a byproduct of fungus that's on the plant. And that
usually associated with peanuts, but not necessarily this. So these are concerns. Okay. These are real concerns. So you know, now there's a lot more standardization. There's testing. There are marijuana dispensaries. I mean, where should you get this stuff from, and how do you make sure that you've got a reliable source?
Well, it depends on your state and how regulated the state is. Mm-hmm. So hopefully you're in a state that has regulations, that has limits, that makes these these processors send their product off to third-party labs to be tested. And then those labs have to be regulated because there were problems in Oregon where some of the lab tests were being falsified. Mm-hmm. You know, the results were being falsified. So because this is an unregulated commodity or a plant, we don't have USDA regulations or inspections. So it you have to look at what your state's regulations are, and hopefully you're in a state that's rather strict. Because you could even be getting something from the dispensary that's not, you know, that's not, you know, healthy. So, each state is different. I don't know all of the regulations for each one. I know Massachusetts is pretty strict in their limits. Maryland is pretty strict. So you have to do that investigation and see what is it your state requires of these processors and growers. And if it's not, if they're not being strict with them, then you need to, you know, rattle the cage and make some noise and talk to your legislators about regulating the industry, because we have sick people who are using these medicines.
Well, it's interesting because there's a lot of big players getting involved with this, big companies that have a high profile and have liability. And I think that's to the good. I mean, obviously there's a gold rush in this, that, you know, a lot of companies are rushing to exploit the new popularity of medical marijuana and CBD. But, you know, there may be some bad players, but there's also a lot of really responsible companies that don't want to tarnish their reputation or incur liability. And they do quality control, you know, just like responsible supplement manufacturers. You know, it's this, the industry is a tale of two cities. You got the people looking for the quick buck and others who want to serve the community and, you know, make an honest profit. Drug interactions, you know, people, some, you know, older people who take these medications, who take medications, they're the ones who may want to consider taking CBD, but they're concerned that, you know, is it going to, you know, is smoke going to come out of my ears when I take it along with my traditional medications?
That's a legitimate concern. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people on the internet that don't know anything about drug interactions and would have you taking CBD along with everything. But there are certain medications, about 65% of the prescriptions we write are metabolized by a particular enzyme that CBD uses up. So if you're using CBD in close proximity to some of these medications, there will be no enzyme left to metabolize that
so
drug.
You might build up higher levels of certain medications as a result. Yeah.
And it's a problem if it's a blood thinner, certain antidepressants, like tricyclic antidepressants, statins, anticonvulsants. So because
it's actually an effect similar to grapefruit. You know, grapefruit has that effect too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It uses up that cytochrome P450-3A4. So I really recommend that patients or anyone who's using CBD, if you're on any type of medication and you're not sure, just space that CBD at least 2 hours apart.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a blood thinner, a statin, an anticonvulsant, any of those, even proton pump inhibitors, they really should be not taken along with. I say don't take CBD along with all your other medication. You take that by itself, a couple hours apart.
Well, this has been a really illuminating discussion, and I really appreciate, you know, the rigor with which you approach a subject that, you know, is kind of fraught with emotionalism and controversy. You're open-minded, but you're also properly cautious when it comes to your recommendations. And you can find them in the Medical Marijuana Guide, Cannabis and Your Health, offers a much deeper dive on the subjects that we've touched upon during this broadcast. But also, you have a service. Would you like to tell our audience about that? Your practice?
Evaluating patients? Yes, I practice in the D.C. area. I'm licensed in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. And I see patients and make evaluations, do recommendations, and make recommendations in terms of what types of products I think would be most beneficial and how to use them, what to look out for. And then I'm also licensed in California, where I can do telemedicine visits and I do that. But I also offer educational consultations to people all over the world. I've spoken to people in many different countries talking about cannabis and how to use it. I can't take on a doctor-patient relationship, mm-hmm. but I can certainly impart information.
Great. And how do people reach you? You have a website or?
I do. I have a website. It's Tacoma Care with a K. So it's TACOMACARE.com.
Great. Well, once again, I got to congratulate you because this is long overdue, a very comprehensive and research-based analysis of this issue that I think is really going to take on greater and greater importance because there's tremendous potential for medical cannabis in treating a wide variety of conditions and also meets some really important needs that we have. A lot of drugs don't work.
Yeah.
A lot of drugs have a lot of side effects. And unfortunately, we have a huge opiate dependency problem in this country. And part of the answer could come from a better selective use of medical cannabis for certain patients.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. I really appreciate it. Dr. Patricia Fry, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. I really enjoyed being able to talk to you.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Tending to your cardiovascular health requires much more than simply lowering your cholesterol. Maintaining heart health requires a combination of diet and lifestyle choices, along with a smart regimen of supplementation. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Heart Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to reduce your heart risk. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for details. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.